Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded August 21st, 2024. Well, the Democratic National Convention commenced Monday in Chicago. The convention looks to be a coronation of Vice President Kamala Harris, who steps into the role Joe Biden vacated suddenly and strangely. The whole business is shady, and there's a lot of grumbling among rank-and-file Democrats, but Harris seems assured to stand against Donald Trump in the November poll. There are two comparisons being made to the infamous DNC convention 56 years ago, when thousands of Americans opposing the continuation of America's war in Vietnam, traveled from across the nation to demonstrate. There are thousands there again, this time to stop the genocide in Palestine, responsible now for the death and maiming of hundreds of thousands and displacement of millions more. David Rovics is a self-described singer-songwriter, writer, anarchist, dad, and lover of life. David is in Chicago now, singing at the center of history as usual, this time in Union Park as the Ministry of Culture with Kamala Emanuel. David's newest album, I Heard a Rumor, is freshly out and follows closely his 20-song compilation, Notes from a Holocaust, written, he said, to, quote, bear witness to the genocide of the Palestinian people that continues by the hour as I publish this album. Incredibly, that genocide grinds on still. David Rovics in the first half. And some of Victoria's good people have gathered in protest on the lawns of British Columbia's seat of power, the legislative buildings, every week since October. They've speechified, rallied, and marched through the downtown streets to bring attention not only to what Israel is doing in Palestine, but also to make more widely known what Canada is doing to support the slaughter of innocents. I joined the march this past Sunday, day 317 of the horror, and talked to some of those taking part, marching in solidarity with Palestine in the second half. But first, David Rovics not fearing loathing at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Welcome back to the program, David.
Thank you, Chris. Great to be with you.
Well, it's great to hear from you. And you, as I said in the introduction, you're at the center of history once again. What's going on in Union Park right now?
Right now, just about nothing. There's a whole lot of cicadas and a whole lot of cops on their perimeter. Not that many, but, you know, and nothing is happening other than that. But apparently there will be a couple of demonstrations later in the afternoon.
What is Union Park? I've never been to Chicago. Is that like analogous to Central Park in New York City?
No, it's just a small kind of neighborhood kind of park, you know, sort of about one block kind of size with tennis courts and a baseball field. And it's just the closest park to the perimeter around the United Center, where I think people were allowed to have permitted events in the end, and the Chicago authorities dragged their feet on through all kinds of legal proceedings. They dragged their feet in every possible way to not give permits to just about anybody, but eventually they gave a permit to folks who were trying to organize protests here.
Well, Chicago is famously or infamously a Democratic Party stronghold. Is that still the case?
Yes, that is still the case. But the new mayor is, by many accounts, a very progressive person, and I don't know much about that person, although I do know people who have real admiration for them, who are bona fide progressives. So I'm curious to know more about the mayor, and I'm afraid I can't tell you a whole lot about it, but they sound a lot better than, you know, former mayors like Daley, who the city is most widely known for, who was kind of like a mafioso kind of mayor, who was in charge during 68. When they talk about the Democratic Party machine in Chicago, he was like the godfather of it for a long time. But it seems there are definitely other elements of the Democratic Party that are in sway, in play here in Chicago.
Well, and his son, too, picked up the mantle some years
That's
later
right.
as well.
Yeah.
Well, so now I saw reports on Twitter this morning when I got up. I've been scanning to see what's going on in Chicago and avoiding assiduously the regular mainstream press, as I always do anyway. And I saw reports of what was described even by Democracy Now! As a clashes, right? that ubiquitous term, police clashes with protesters last night, which usually means a police riot. In my experience, I read that from the National Lawyers Guild, who has observers at the demos in Chicago. They say that 72 confirmed arrests happened last night. And I see unofficially there was four journalists also arrested, some wearing like more sort of mainstreamy press people wearing press credentials and so forth were swept away too. What do you know about what's going on there in that regard and what happened last night?
Yeah, that I know there was a protest at the Israeli embassy or the Israeli consulate last night. And then the same group that was organizing that was also the group that broke away from the bigger march that had somewhere, I've heard estimates of 5,000, that sound realistic, on this march 2 days ago. And the folks that broke away from the march are from a local group called Behind Enemy Lines. And they, I don't know how many people were involved, but it sounded like a fairly small number who started apparently with immediate success pulling down one of the three fences around the perimeter, but before the second or third fences had been breached, the police apparently had the situation in hand and they arrested a number of people. And I wasn't there to see how they were behaving, but from reports that I heard, the police did not engage in collective punishment against all the other protesters or something like that. They dealt with the ones who had been tearing down the fence, and it sounds like it was not an action that had any possible chance of succeeding in the first place. And I don't know what the motivation of it was, other than just to, you know, make a symbolic fence tearing down action for, you know, whatever reason. But yeah, that's what I know about it. So I think I know more about what happened 2 nights ago than last night.
Well, what happened 2 nights ago?
That's what I'm talking about. It's what happened 2 nights ago, basically, these arrests at the fence.
Oh, and the last night.
There were arrests. Yeah, there were arrests 2 nights ago, and there were arrests last night. And last night was at the consulate, and apparently they broke away, and some folks went towards the perimeter again.
I read that it was a breakaway group that then went, and then, you know, then the police came in, and there's some video, but it doesn't look like 68 from what I saw. But it sounds a little black blocky to me, which we've had experience with up here in Canada when you've got these meetings, these confabs of, you know, the G20 and so forth, where these guys that, I mean, I just read a thing about the 68, and I mentioned it in the introduction, the demonstrations in 68, and 10 years after the fact, according to this article, it was revealed that one out of six of every demonstrator in 68 in Chicago was working with the feds or with local police or some other organization. So, I mean, it's not a stretch to think that there might be a little bit of that going on. And these guys are set up to break windows and make everybody look unreasonable.
Absolutely. I mean, this is what the cops do all the time. And I think that the police and other, you know, intelligence agencies and whoever else is involved with sort of the constant effort to divide and rule the left. And they are constantly trying to introduce these kinds of tactics in order to make sure that movements are as unpopular as possible. You know, if the, you know, whoever is the first one to burn a dumpster or the first one to, you know, pull down the fence when you're talking about just a tiny little handful of people doing this kind of stuff, It's very likely to be police involved with that. And I would add to that phenomenon, the phenomenon of having protests, rallies, where all the speakers are just shouting and there's no music to speak of, you know, no live music at all, which has been the norm in the American, in United States protest scene in many different sort of subsets of the left, social movements, whatever you want to call these different groups that all have a certain kind of identity politics orientation. these kinds of these protests are now going back for the past 10 years or so. They almost never have live music, and it's really a brilliant way to self sabotage any kind of a movement to have these kinds of little breakaway groups doing random acts of property destruction, and then to have rallies with no live music. It's if the police are not involved with making these kinds of plans and with misdirecting left groups in such a way that they think that the way to do a rally is to have a bunch of people shouting at the top of their lungs into a microphone and have no live music, and then people go march and shout slogans that are literally left over from the 60s. Yeah, it's really bizarre. I mean, it really feels like people learned how to organize protests by watching television and, watching like caricatures of protests on television. And then they tried to, sort of organize one like that. Like on TV, it's always like people standing around holding signs and chanting boring chants, and in reality, in this country and around the world, historically and around the world still today, protests are not at all like that. They involve lots of art, lots of music, lots of theater, lots of, they're mostly music. There's loads of giant puppets. There's lots of food. And, that's how it is in the world, at large. But in this country, it's become a real, a real caricature. It's just a bizarre. I feel like I'm living on a movie set.
Yeah, well, or in a cartoon. The I haven't seen a huge puppet in ages, and we've been demonstrating here in Victoria every week, and there's been some music, sometimes some live performers, mostly canned music. But yeah, whatever happened to, if I can't dance to the revolution, I don't want to be a part of it, or something to that effect.
Yeah, that, of course, it's not exactly a quote, really, but I guess that, the person who's attributed that, that quote was an American anarchist named Emma Goldman. And there's and this tradition, of music in this country in particular. I mean, not to get too nationalistic on you here, but like, the United States has produced so many of styles of music that have been massively influential around the world throughout the 20th century. I mean, the jazz, rock and roll, bluegrass, hip hop, whatever. I mean, this country has a lot of culture that people should be using to our advantage, like by playing, having bands, and solo performers and hip hop artists and whoever else at protests. It's crazy not to take advantage of this. It's madness. And then you go to, someplace like Germany, which is not particularly known for, being down with culture and stuff. But you go to a protest in Germany and 90% of the program is music, including a lot of great hip hop, a lot of great German language hip hop.
Puppets and costumes and all kinds of stuff. Yeah, it's made to bring people, to draw people in rather than to push them away. Absolutely.
Exactly.
I don't know what's going on in Germany right now, but at any rate, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with David Rovics. David is a self-described singer-songwriter, a writer, an anarchist, a dad, a lover of life. He's in Chicago. I'm talking to him from Union Park in the, maybe not the center of Chicago, but very close to where the DNC, the Democratic National Convention, is going on. David's newest album, just out, is I Heard a Rumor, and it follows his 20-song compilation, Notes from a Holocaust, which me and David spoke about a few months back when you were last on, David. David, you say that maybe this is no way to conduct a rally or rallies. What about the way that the Democratic Party is conducting the convention? This has been really bizarre, and there's been so much going on and compressed into such a small space during the summertime as well. But, we had this weird assassination attempt of Trump, then the president is kind of forced out or stepped out, or there's a lot of conspiracy about what exactly happened and what's going on, and now all of a sudden popping forth from the head of Zeus, Kamala Harris has ascended without a single vote in any primary or anything else. is going to, you know, looks like she's headed for the presidential nomination at a walk, and maybe even the presidency. With all those people there to demonstrate against what's going on in Palestine, it's been planned for months and months. But now there's this other element of this really weird dynamic going on within the selection process for the party leadership as well. Are you hearing or seeing any kind of pushback from the streets against what's going on inside the convention, independent of Palestine and Gaza?
I mean, definitely what's happening on the streets is the overwhelming theme that is Palestine and people who are just outraged with both parties and, you know, at this point specifically with the Biden administration for facilitating a genocide. What was most interesting as far as talking to other people who are coming for other reasons was on the plane on the way to Chicago, where the plane from Portland to Chicago, the direct flight, it was full of delegates and politicians and a few protest, you know, people who are flying to protest various Palestine-related protests and such. And I was talking with a delegate, and it was a fascinating conversation. And definitely, like, there's a lot of enthusiasm among the whole sort of Democratic Party crowd. I can say, you know, certainly including just throughout all the liberals in my extended family, of which there are many, you know, there's a lot of people who are very excited about Kamala and who were very, very not excited about Biden. And, you know, that's I think a lot of that has to do with successful, PR campaigns carried out by her supporters. But, you know, this is that's definitely a phenomenon. And then certainly there's groups here like the Poor People's Army folks who came in from Philadelphia and elsewhere. And they have been protesting at conventions of both parties for decades. And I'm sure I can speak for them for a moment. They don't think that either the Biden administration or the future Kamala Harris administration is going to address the housing crisis that we've been having in this country for so long, that there's no reason to think that anything is going to change as far as that goes, other than just, hopeful thinking, blind optimism, you know. But we can see certainly from the history of many Democratic administrations for the past many decades and, what's gone on under both Republicans and Democrats has been a worsening of the housing crisis and a weakening of rent control laws and a lessening of the building of public housing, all that stuff. That the trajectory has been bad, from bad to worse, under both parties. And it's just fantastical thinking to think that anything might change under Harris, as far as I'm concerned. And certainly that would, I'd say most of the people marching on the streets would agree with that.
Well, she's a bit of a tabula rasa. She hasn't actually been in any sort of functionary position. I mean, the vice presidency being ornamental, largely, for a very long time. And when she was as district attorney or attorney general in California, her record wasn't very progressive. It wasn't great at all, in fact. And when you say that some of your progressive relatives and acquaintances are excited about Kamala, what are they excited about? I don't see it.
Yeah, well, I said liberal, not progressive, and uh-huh. it may be not an important distinction, but I mean, I don't mean liberal in any kind of a positive sense, but progressive. They'd all embrace the term progressive too, whether or not that's the same thing, I don't know, but they. I mean, these are people who believe they're people who watch MSNBC and listen to NPR. And, you know, honestly, I have no idea how to defend their bankrupt positions. I mean, it makes no sense. If they had, if they were better at critical analysis and you know, were not so apt to, you know, be hopeful about whatever they hear from the talking heads, you know, I think, you know, that'd be great. But, you know, it's yeah, I mean, people just, you know, if most of what people are exposed to are lies, then, you know, they'll eventually start believing them, you know, and it's, I've seen it with people, particular people who I won't mention by name, where, like, you know, it used to be when shows like Democracy Now! Were available on cable, you know, I know people who had a really sharp, relatively radical analysis about a lot of things that they got from watching Democracy Now! Every day. And then when Democracy Now! Disappeared from their cable package, and they looked for what appeared to be, as far as they could tell, the next closest thing, and they started watching MSNBC, you know, the flavor seems a bit similar to them, I guess, but the actual content is nothing like it. And, you know, so now the same people who would have been talking about, you know, the genocide in Gaza, if they were still watching Democracy Now!, are talking about, you know, anti-Semitism on the campuses in the U.S. instead.
Well, okay, let's not waste too much time on that then. We don't have much time left. There's an outfit I saw, just a tweet from the Chicago Coalition for Justice in Palestine. Have you run across these guys milling about, or do you know anything about them?
I know that I think they're one of the groups that's been involved with the part of the coalition, I guess, that's been putting on these protests, but I don't know.
Okay, not the breakaway guys, though, eh?
No, that's the breakaway guys is a group called Behind Enemy Lines.
Behind Enemy Lines, yeah, and we talked off air about the cleverness of that. David, I saw a picture of you when you were like posted on Twitter, getting on the airplane with Kamala Emanuel, your partner. I want to talk about that.
The good Kamala, we call her.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about, like, God, you know, is this time to change your name or what? But you were wearing a Free Palestine shirt. Did you have any trouble with the authorities or other passengers walking around with this shirt on?
No, what I find wearing around Palestine flag T-shirts or Palestine action T-shirts is I get about maybe 1 in 100 people or so who sees the T-shirt in a place like an airport will say something like nice T-shirt or, you know, thanks for wearing that T-shirt or Free Palestine or something like that. And then everybody else will ignore it. And, you know, I'll get the occasional sort of dirty look, but certainly nobody ever says anything negative or challenges me about it.
Okay.
The last time I had problems with a T-shirt was when I used to wear a massive picture of George W. Bush and the words "international terrorist" on it. I did get some.
In retrospect, Bush seems like the old poop that he's become somehow. Regardless of what he's done. Well, so, okay, now, the Midwest tour, you're with Kamala Emanuel, or Good Kamala. Ministry of Culture, tell me about that.
Yeah, I was just getting a little tired of, you know, because most of the touring I'm doing for years now, she's been with me. And so, you know, just listing our names just started seeming like a bit unwieldy. And I thought, well, I know a lot of people who are just too musicians and they still have a band name, and so I thought Ministry of Culture, that has a nice ring to it, because it's basically what we're trying to do is inject culture into the left, and I thought Ministry of Culture is a nice name given our general mission, which I'm now calling Seegerism. It's a Seegerist mission.
Pete Seeger, of course. And you're going to bring the ministry to Vancouver Island, where I'm speaking to you from, next month, right?
Yeah, although Kamala won't be with me there, but I'll be coming up to the one person version of the Ministry of Culture will be in Vancouver Island at the end of September.
The one hand clapping tour.
Yeah.
Well, okay, David, can you tell our listeners in our final moments how they can access your material and recommend for me a song to play for the transition?
they can go to davidrovics.com, and then they'll find everything there, and tour dates and all that stuff. And a song to play for the transition, Boycott, Sanction, and Divest.
All right. Boycott, Sanction, and Divest. And I think most of our listeners know what that refers to, except for perhaps if they're listening, the people at the University of Victoria who are resisting with all their strength following that advice. David, it's always a joy to speak with you, and I wish you and the ministry the best with the Chicago and beyond.
Thanks so much, Chris. Good talking to you.
It's always great. Now, everybody else, stay tuned. I was walking the streets here in Victoria, as I mentioned, we do, and we have been doing since October. But this week, I did something a little different. I went out and did some old school, original gangster stuff, and did some streeters walking along with the marchers. And it was good fun, and it's interesting, too. Thanks again, David.
Thank you.
It's happening now, like it has before, at the universities. In a time of war, put people together, they'll communicate, talk about things like college and state, talk about the research that built the Iron Dome, talk about their relatives starving back at home, talk about tuition and where the money's spent and where all the buildings in Gaza went. Wake up each morning and the headlines say how many hundreds of Palestinians died today, how many thousands were killed in the past week. People get together, people speak. The newscasters say with surety the campuses lack security. Meanwhile, across the ocean wide, Palestinian genocide. People are saying they won't leave till they win, and then the police are sent in, beaten and arrested, staff and students, and to try to silence this growing movement, they're punishing people for making it known that the direct connection can be easily shown. How the investments of this institution are funding another final solution. Where it goes is anyone's guess. After all, this is the U.S. Battles have been lost and won, but with bombs being dropped every day by the ton, with the orphaned and famished beneath the sky, waiting for the moment when it's their turn to die. Some people just can't look away. They have to set up a tent on the campus and say, boycott, sanction, and divest. 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 Boycott, sanction, and divest.
Word, sound, power. Guerrilla Radio, get your power.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, some of Victoria's good people have gathered in protest on the lawns of British Columbia's seat of power, the legislative buildings in Victoria, every week since October. They've speechified, rallied, and marched through the downtown streets to bring attention not only to what Israel is doing in Palestine, but also to make more widely known what Canada is doing to support the slaughter of innocents. I joined the march this past Sunday, day 317, of this horror, and talk to some of those taking part. Here we are, marching in solidarity with Palestine.
So today's march is going to be silent again, as for the past 2 weeks. But before we begin, I have a couple of announcements. First, there is a fundraising dinner.